It's Wednesday, November 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, investigators work to solve the mystery of a crashed plane.
We had hoped that Turkey would be a real model for the Middle East about how you could be both Islamic and modern, and so this is very disturbing.
Media freedom threatened in Turkey ahead of Obama visit. Also ahead, students speak out against higher education costs, and don't feel sorry for Justin Bieber. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. Russian aviation officials are analyzing the recovered flight recorders from the ill-fated Russian Metro jet that crashed in the Egyptian desert on Saturday. It killed all 224 people on board. MetroJet executive Alexander Smirnov said Monday external reasons, not technical failure, caused the crash, but offered no evidence, and the Russian Air Ministry dismissed the assertion as premature. Mystery continues to shroud the sudden mid-air breakup of the A321 twin-engine aircraft at about 9,000 meters in altitude, 23 minutes into its flight from Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, to St. Petersburg, Russia.
Initial reports say the Airbus jetliner disintegrated in the air before hitting the ground. Terrorist group Islamic State has claimed responsibility for downing the plane, but the aircraft's black boxes, the cockpit voice recorder, and the flight data recorder will provide more reliable information.
The black boxes were found on the first day. They received insignificant damage, and after everyone involved in the investigation arrives, we'll start decoding the records. We'll do everything possible to establish the causes of the tragedy with the participation of international experts.
On Monday, President Putin made his first public appearance after the crash.
I would like to express my condolences to the loved ones and relatives of the victims. It is a great tragedy, and of course we are with you in heart and soul. I would like to thank the people of St. Petersburg for their reaction, which all the country has seen, and all the Russians for their words of condolence.
Putin stressed the importance of finding the cause of the crash so that authorities can take appropriate action. Officials of the Russian airline company ruled out technical or human error, saying only that external influence could have caused the crash.
There are no such faults like engine failure, system failure. There is no such combination of systems failure that could lead to a plane breaking up in the air. Yes, under a tragic multi-level contingency when several systems fail, along with some other accompanying factors, that indeed could lead to a catastrophe. But in that case, the aircraft would break up through hitting the ground. Aircraft cannot break up in the air because of a failure of any systems.
Russia has sent about 100 experts to help Egyptian authorities search for the remains of victims and the aircraft debris. The United States has offered help with the investigation. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
Experts say aircraft rarely break up in flight, but when they do, it's usually caused by one of three factors: weather, collision, or an external cause, such as a bomb or missile. Both Cairo and Moscow are playing down a claim by Islamic State affiliate in the Sinai that it's responsible. The director of U.S. National Intelligence, James Clapper, said on Monday that he knew of no direct evidence that terrorism played a part. Well, time now on International Edition to turn our attention to social media. And as always, our G. Abby Lee is right here in the studio to bring us the latest. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
What's the big story online today?
It has to do with a change on Twitter. Now, whenever I introduce a popular tweet in this segment, I mention how many times it's been shared and marked as a favorite. But going forward, I'll have to mention how many times it's been shared and how many times it's been hearted.
Hearted? Now, what does that mean?
Twitter's favorite button, which was in the shape of a star, has been replaced with a heart symbol. It's still the same concept of marking a tweet you like, but in a different format. So many media outlets are tweeting about the change, and they include The Forbes magazine, BBC News, and Market Watch.
Some big ones. So let's hear from one of them.
Sure. MarketWatch tweeted this. Twitter ditched its star icon and favorite button and replaced it with a heart.
Well, gee, it seems like such a minor change, almost unnecessary, but what's the reason behind it?
Well, Twitter's product manager wrote about it in a blog post. He wrote, "You might like a lot of things, but not everything can be your favorite." And he added, "Unlike a star, the heart is a universal symbol."
Indeed. It seems like a lot of social media sites are using the heart as a symbol, right?
Exactly. Instagram and Periscope app use a heart symbol, and Twitter also revealed it will change the symbol and terminology in its Vine app.
I see. So what's the public's reaction to this?
For that, I have a tweet that's getting more than 1,000 retweets. It's by a user named Peter Sable, and it reads like this. "I work at Twitter, but even I can't believe how we replaced a completely value-neutral term like favorite with something so loaded." He sent out another tweet later writing, "I heart people who understand irony," confirming he was being sarcastic in his earlier tweet. Jim, I'm not sure if all those who shared his initial tweet knew about that. Back to you.
Well, we click the heart for you for being here today. G. Abby Lee tweets for our VOA International Edition Twitter account. That's at VOA underscore IE. And of course, you can also follow her on her own account at G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This is VOA's International Edition. Just 2 days after a solid parliamentary election victory by the ruling Justice and Democracy Party, Turkish police on Tuesday detained at least 35 people. That included regional administrators and former police chiefs in western Izmir province, believed to be the supporters of a Muslim cleric opposed to President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. On Monday, police raided the offices of the magazine Nokta, and its latest publication warned that the election paves the way for the beginning of civil war. Two editors were detained. A White House spokesman on Monday said the United States has publicly and privately raised its concerns about freedom of the press, speech, and freedom of assembly in Turkey. President Obama is scheduled to travel to Turkey to attend the two-day G20 summit on November 15th, but it's not clear whether he will meet with Mr. Erdogan. Regional analyst Jonathan Edelman, an associate professor at the University of Denver, told VOA's Victor Beatty, "The Turkish leader is becoming increasingly autocratic, and his election victory is a disappointment."
We appreciated what Turkey had done under Tayyip Erdogan in the early years, but in the last few years, he has turned to becoming extremely authoritarian, to the bloody conflict with the Kurds, towards Islamic fundamentalism. And we had hoped that Turkey would be a real model for the Middle East about how you could be both Islamic and modern. And so this is very disturbing to many policymakers in Washington and in Europe.
International election observers Monday said the elections were free and peaceful, but criticized media restrictions in the run-up to the vote, including the seizure by the government of an opposition media company and criminal investigations of journalists who allegedly supported terrorism or defamed Mr. Erdogan.
What is so worrisome is that Turkey was doing very well economically. It almost tripled its GNP. There was major reform of the Turkish economy, and people thought that here was a real model for so many of the countries in the Middle East that have done just so terribly and haven't been able to move towards relatively free elections, towards more democratic means and kind of social capitalism. And so this is extraordinarily demoralizing because, after all, Turkey used to rule the Middle East for 400 years as the Ottoman Turkish Empire, and a lot of people were really hopeful. But he, in his older years, has just seemed to want to create a one-man dictatorship, now as president, before as prime minister. And, you know, this is not the first election. They had one only a couple months ago in which he did not get a majority. And we saw the kind of multi-party system that we were all really hoping to see in the Middle East, and it's so rare. So it's disappointing, but the real question, of course, is how far is he going to try to pursue these notions of a one-party dictatorship? And he's building his support heavily on the countryside and the people from the countryside who moved into the big cities such as Istanbul. And also because it's a vital part of NATO. It is the southern flank of NATO. We've had a lot of problems with them on taking in, letting ISIS people transit through Turkey to come into Syria and to Iraq. And so there's a lot of discussions that are going to have to be held in the next few months. And hopefully we can see some improvement despite this election majority.
According to the French press agency, the European Union, desperate for help to solve the migrant crisis, has little option but to deal with Mr. Erdogan on his own terms following his election victory. They said he can now set the agenda for a European Union which dislikes doing business with a man who wants to join the bloc but also flouts its rules on human rights and press freedom. One analyst say the EU will be forced to swallow its pride, pander to the hubristic ego of President Erdogan.
There's little doubt that this analysis is largely correct, and it's a very sad one because this isn't the Erdogan that we knew 5 or 7 years ago or his AK Justice and Development Party. It was trumpeted for what it had done for the economy and for poor people and so forth. But right now, the Europeans facing a deluge of immigrants. I mean, there's up to 800,000 people out there right now who are trying to migrate to Europe, and it's estimated there could be easily another million or two within the next 6 months or a year. Turkey holds the keys. He knows that. And it's a sad moment for the EU, but I think it's a sadder moment for the Middle East.
Edelman says the election victory puts into question whether Turkey can be a model of democracy for the rest of the Middle East. South African universities have been returning to normal after more than a week of student protests against plans to raise tuition fees that many of them cannot afford. The sometimes violent protests caused several major South African universities to shut down briefly last month. These protests were the focus of our latest hashtag VOA TV program, which was broadcast earlier today. And I'm joined in the studio by its co-host, Michael Lippin.
Hey, Jen.
Hi. Michael, what's the latest on the situation in South Africa?
Hey, Jen. Well, I can tell you that those protests subsided last week after South African President Jacob Zuma agreed to the students' main demand and ordered a freeze on tuition fees for 2016. But some students complained that the government's pledge does not go far enough. One of them appeared on our show. Her name is Leanne Naidu. She's an activist at Wits University in Johannesburg, where annual undergraduate tuition is around $3,000. Here's what she said about the issue.
Look, I think the way we need to start is by acknowledging that South Africa is the most unequal society in the world. So for half or for some of our society, that amount doesn't sound like much. But there are a whole range of students who would struggle and even not be able to afford those kind of fees. And then we must recognize that fees obviously differ from institution to institution. I think what has come about with the Fees Must Fall movement is a strong outcry to say that we need good quality education, higher education, for people who can't afford it. That this there's a big debate going on now about whether free quality education should be available to everyone. And under the current conditions, people are saying that we have to make sure that people who can't afford it are able to access higher education. So the question, I couldn't answer it easily. For me, it's maybe not that much money, but for a whole range of people, specifically people who are trying to make it out of dire poverty, it's completely unaffordable for them.
Well, another guest on our show was an American retired history professor at State University of New York, Lawrence Whitner. I asked him how the financial pressures on South Africa's students compare to those facing Americans here in the U.S. Let's have a listen to what he said.
Well, it's very similar in many ways. Dating back to the 19th century, the United States had free public higher education. And in fact, that went on free or virtually free until the 1960s, when the average tuition at a public university or college in the United States was only $243 per year. The University of California system was free until the 1980s. But that's been dramatically changing in recent decades. when tuition has been dramatically hiked up, and today is beyond the means of most college students and their families to pay for it. And so the average student today in the United States has a debt of $30,000 after completing college.
That's a staggering amount. And if you want to find out more about that issue, check out the hashtag VOA Facebook page and watch the show. Jim?
Thanks to our co-host, Michael Lippin of hashtag VOA, and I'm going to do that right after our program. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
VOA Susan Yockey and music aficionado Larry London are in the studio, and guess what? They're not sorry to tell you about a new song from Justin Bieber.
Popular singer Adele has shattered a record with her long-awaited song Hello, becoming the first track downloaded more than a million times in a week in the U.S., and if you listen to us regularly, you know that Larry London with Border Crossings was talking to us just recently about Hello and what a big hit it was going to be. And Larry joins us right now. And Larry, you were right.
I predicted it.
You
and
did.
There it is.
You were right.
And just hot on the heels of Adele's song Hello, we've got Justin Bieber's brand new song off of his fourth album, which is called Purpose, that goes on sale November 13th. And the new song is called Sorry. And that's at number two right now, just behind Adele.
Is it too late now to say sorry? Cause I'm missing more than just your body. Oh, is it too late now to say sorry? Yeah, I know that I let you down. Is it too late to say sorry now? I'm sorry.
Well, Adele's standing in his way.
Yes, she is, and deservedly so. I mean, we've been waiting a number of years for both albums to come out, and he has chosen November 13th to release Purpose, which is the same date that One Direction will be releasing their brand new album, so it's an interesting story. Justin was discovered on YouTube by Usher in 2009.
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, and he was signed by Scooter Braun and has released, as I say, three albums. His fourth is coming up. He's 21. He's been written about so much in the news about his relationship with Selena Gomez and their on and off love, which is now off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. People are wondering, is the song Sorry actually written for Selena Gomez? Because if you watch the music video, Selena's Latina, the music video features all Latinas who are dancing and singing Sorry.
Well, it does sound like it might have some merit.
It might have something to do with that. Now, Justin is known to his fans, who are called Beliebers, as a bad boy for all the trouble he's gotten into over the years. And this last year, he was on the Comedy Central roast where he promised he'd be better, he'd improve, he'd clean up his act. Well, he's not doing himself any favors.
I thought he was maturing.
He is maturing, but not fast enough, apparently. In the last week, he performed to promote his new album in Oslo, Norway. During the show, he was drinking out of a water bottle. He gave some fans the water bottle and spilled some on the stage, so he stopped after one song to clean up the mess.
Mm-hmm.
The fans wouldn't let him clean up the mess. It was right at the front of the stage. They were grabbing at him, tugging on him, taking photos. He said, stop. They kept doing it. He said, that's enough. He threw the microphone down and stormed off stage.
Whoa.
And then 2 days later, performing in Madrid, same kind of purpose. Get the purpose. That's the record name.
Mm-hmm.
He was on promoting the new album, and apparently he got agitated with the fans' lack of beat, being able to keep the beat. He stopped the song and said, please, at least clap to the correct beat. So he's been kind of a little testy these days.
Well, these people, the first concert with the water, did they get their money back?
I don't really know. Mm-hmm. Haven't heard one way or another. I know they were very disappointed. That much I do know. And yeah. I don't know if they're paying for these concerts or not, or if this is just a promotional type thing where you show up and get to see him sing. And probably he isn't going to do many songs. It's not a full 90-minute concert. He probably came there with the intention of doing three or four songs from the new album, but they only got one, and he left unhappy, and they were unhappy. And then later on, he put on Instagram that he was sorry, and he regretted it.
Sorry, huh?
He said, sorry. And he said, he's having a bad week, is how he framed it. So.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Larry, for stopping by.
Absolutely, Susan. Enjoy the song, and sorry.
Sorry.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website, voanews.com. We're there any time of the day or night that you like. We're also on Twitter. Follow us on our handle, at @VOA_IE. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Aydin Utku. For G. Abby Lee and Michael Lippin, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have the best day you can. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Everyone wins when girls go to school. For every year of education a girl attains, her future earning potential goes up by 10 to 20%. And because she is likely to share up to 90% of her earnings with her family and her community, everyone around her will benefit. Her children will be more than twice as likely to survive past the age of 5, and they will be healthier and more likely to go to school than will the children of her less literate sisters. Ultimately, educated girls grow into productive women who contribute to their country's economies and help pull others out of poverty. Nonetheless, over 62 million girls around the world are not in school, and millions more are fighting to stay there. Thus, to increase education opportunities for girls, the United States government introduced Let Girls Learn, a program through which a number of U.S. government agencies and non-governmental organizations, including the Department of State, U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, the Peace Corps and the Millennium Challenge Corporation work together to address some of the obstacles preventing adolescent girls from attending and completing school and receiving high-quality education. Pakistan is one country where girls often find it difficult to attend school. This may be due to lack of funds, because they live too far from the nearest school, or because some within their society disapprove of education for girls, especially once they reach adolescence. That is why the First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama, and First Daughter of Pakistan, Mariam Sharif, launched the Let Girls Learn initiative in Pakistan on October 22, 2015, at the White House. This initiative will provide $70 million for new and existing education programs that will help educate 200,000 Pakistani girls between the ages of 10 and 19. Educated girls become women who strengthen their families, communities, and countries, said USAID Acting Administrator Alfonso Lenhart. By increasing access to educational opportunities during the critical time of adolescence, this important initiative will be transformative for Pakistan, empowering young women to overcome barriers and lift themselves out of poverty. We look forward to continuing to work with the government of Pakistan and our partners around the world to ensure girls everywhere get the education they deserve.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.